live from the internet.
It's Faces on the Radio.
Hey, it's the March of the Gay Parade!
Oh, how nice.
Everybody, I'm Hollister Dixon here with Face on the Radio. As always, you spot
on. What's up, everybody?
And Ari Emick.
How's it going?
It's been a while since we've met. That was a new, or that was an old of Montreal song at the very beginning of our show, March of the Gay Parade. Today on our show, we've got a couple of the guys from Eyelids joining us, Chris Lucerenko and John Moen, here to talk about their history with music and their band Eyelids, who have a who just had a new record come out. So, what's everyone been up to?
It's been a while.
It has.
Been like almost over 2 weeks. We've gone to plenty of shows.
Yes,
indeed. I don't really know where to start because they each have quite a bit of depth to them. You guys saw television. Maybe we can start with that.
We can start with television.
Sure. Yeah. June 23rd up in
Seattle, Washington.
The Moore Theater.
Yes, indeed. It's my first time going up to Washington in a while.
That's a great room.
I really liked it.
I'd seen Patti Smith there back in January, and I was down on the floor. This time we were up in the second balcony. Our last guest, Colin Sanders, was among.
Yes, he was.
Crew of Colin, so.
As was our friend of the show, Cannon Riggs.
Right. Yeah.
So, what did you think?
Television. It was definitely worth the trip, the money, the energy to like
absolutely
see those songs performed
yeah
by those hands.
That's crazy.
With that voice, Tom Verlaine, and I mean. The main set was Marquee Moon, and it felt like every song was a alternate universe top 40 hit.
Absolutely. You know,
so
I. It was weird that they didn't just play the record front to back because that's all that set was. It was just those eight songs. But I kind of liked that they ended it with that title track because that's such a massive song, and it felt really good to go out on that high note. And they played a couple of other songs?
Yeah, the second set, or the encore, was like a track from Adventure and a track from the record they put out in the 1990s.
Was that from that record?
The 1990s?
Yeah, that first one, that like 15-minute jam that they did.
Possibly, yeah.
That was a great bit.
Yeah, it was funny. Colin was saying he kind of wished the encore had been the first set and the set had been the encore. It was kind of like, I don't know, he really enjoyed the show pretty consistently, and but he was like, they kind of lost me or something.
That's strange.
Yeah.
But
it makes sense.
Yeah. I thought that it was really great to see a band that big playing such a stripped-down, informal show.
A band that feels that big.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not the world's biggest television fan. I'm not quite sure about how big they are to people, but I know that they're a known thing, and it's so weird to see a band of that. They're a mythical band to a lot of people,
yeah,
and seeing them
iconic
just
iconic album cover.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, with Tom Verlaine just looking so pale.
Yeah, they. I mean, it was just them with a couple of Vox amps just playing those songs. I mean, they asked for a lighting change in the middle of the set. It wasn't planned. It was just what they were doing. It was fun to see that.
Yeah, it definitely had that old school CBGB's aesthetic in terms of like their attitude to the show. I think they're maybe the last remaining like headlining CBGB's band that isn't in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame right now.
Yeah, that sounds about
Ramones,
right.
Ramones, Talking Heads, and Blondie are all in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
Patti Smith as well.
Mm-hmm.
And
Lou Reed.
Where
well,
the hell
Lou
is television?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Television, that's interesting. I I knew that they were in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but that totally seems unjust to me because they were a very unique band. I mean, they like the punk rock set identified with them, but their music had a lot of virtuosity and guitar solos and stuff that was totally the antithesis of what you would think punk rock is, you know. So they're
a
really unique band in that sense. I think what gets them over is just the energy and like the passion in those songs. Like you can tell that they were coming from a totally different place. But then again, a lot of the most memorable CBGB bands, like the ones you just mentioned, had their kind of unique take on what they're like. Yeah, the Talking Heads were a punk rock band, but they were also not a punk rock band.
Yeah.
So I guess that's, but yeah, it's kind of a mystery to me why Television is not in the Rock. I mean, if it took so long for like Rush and Black Sabbath and whomever to get in, why isn't Television in there? I mean, they're equally as important to their respective followings as those bands are to theirs.
It's possible that they don't quite have the crossover appeal that those bands do, and that might affect it a little bit because they're legendary, but they're also kind of legendary in a cult way rather than being this massive cultural thing.
I think
thing.
The other bands had their massive hits, basically.
Yeah.
Blondie, even Patti Smith, obviously, their Talking Heads were huge.
Absolutely.
At the time they wrapped things up.
Yeah.
I could definitely, as far as Television goes, and you know,
the
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is another conversation.
Sure.
But
it always
is.
It was
interesting to hear, like, in reverse, sort of hear how they've influenced a lot of artists. Like, one of those, everyone who listened to Marquee Moon probably started a band.
Absolutely.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot, I could hear, like, oh, like, I'm sure Stephen Malkmus loves Television.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm.
you can hear it in there.
Like, he's a virtuoso guitar hero himself. Yes. But also, low key about it, you know?
Yeah.
And he's not Joe Satriani or anything, he's Stephen Malkmus.
Yeah, like.
And I think his hero is probably Tom Verlaine.
Yeah, and watching them do Prove It, like, there were moments where it definitely felt like it was like watching older Stephen Malkmus.
Right.
Because it was that was part of what I enjoyed about the entire set as well, definitely in that song, but there was this laid-back, casual swagger to the whole thing.
Right. That's like, a really great way to describe it.
Yeah, it almost felt like they couldn't be bothered with the fact that they have this mythic status.
Right.
They're just like, why don't we play these songs? It'll be fun.
Yeah, and they definitely played with a lot of confidence.
Absolutely. Do you want to talk a little bit about that crowd, though?
Yeah, what was the deal?
What was up with them?
People just kept yelling shit at them.
Yeah,
they were excited to see them,
I
guess.
Yeah, like, they were yelling out drunk requests.
Yeah,
it was awful.
It was unbecoming.
It was. I did shout out a thank you. That was my little bit of a heckle.
Oh, you're the one.
I am the one, because...
Was it crowded on the floor? Because the second balcony was pretty empty, which was like... kind of weird to look around where I was and like,
mm-hmm.
not be able to know how full the rest of the house was.
The floor was, it wasn't completely full, but it was pretty full.
Sure.
Yeah, it was nice. I don't know if I was expecting it to be sold out and packed or not, but...
I don't know. I kind of was.
Reunion shows are such crapshoot.
They toured. The Northwest was.
Yeah,
I don't remember.
Me neither. I don't
play like only
either.
One show in the Northwest. It seems like, I mean, I saw a lot of people from Portland.
Yeah, yeah. It was weird rounding the corner to the Moore Theater and seeing Cannon standing there.
Yeah.
It's like, this is, I'm like, I know you're supposed to be here, but
right.
this is wrong.
Yeah.
You're like 300 miles from home.
Bizarre,
go away.
Bizarro world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Death Grips a couple nights before the Roseland.
Yes, indeed. I guess we're going in weird, choppy order. Death Grips played a show, and it was about 20...
Wait a second. Hold that thought.
Yeah.
Death Grips played a show.
Death Grips are actually playing their shows. That's noteworthy enough. They're playing their shows. It seems like they're starting a little bit late every night, just because, I guess, all of the venues that they're playing need to be...
on time.
Yeah, exactly. Like, 20 minutes. They started at 9. They were supposed to start at 8:30. Whatever. They played twice as long as they did when we all saw them at the Star Theater, and they played with about three times as much intensity. It's been a long time since I felt a crowd that dangerous. Like, I feared for the state of my bones a lot of the time. It was really something, and they did exactly what they did last time, where they just played end on end on end. There was no pause between songs. One song would end and the next would begin. It's so strange to see a band do that because it requires so much energy to play those songs in the first place and to not take a step back at any point and get a breather is really interesting. That's the hottest I've ever felt the Roseland, probably like since
More
Sonic
than
Youth.
Odd Future?
More than Odd Future, about as much as Sonic Youth. That was a hot show. I don't remember Odd Future being that bad, but...
Maybe temperature-wise it wasn't, because I don't remember what time of year that show was.
Yeah, even. I think that might have been March or something like that, but I don't remember. But they were great.
But I think the dangerous part was what reminded me of Odd Future.
It was...
That audience was nuts.
That audience was nuts. Death Grips was crazier, though. And
that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, it was great. They played as a three-piece instead of the... just two-piece of MC Red and Zach Hill that they played with the Star Theater. They had Andy Morin, who does all of the electronic aspect, on stage going nuts. It was something to see. I can't wait to see that band again. I hope that they just keep doing what they're doing. I don't know. I don't know if they've got a plan. They seem to be a band wholly without a plan. And that's kind of fun in a lot of ways.
The most unpredictable band in... indie music, and not necessarily in a positive way, because a lot of people...
Are they on a major label?
Yeah, no. Well, they were, and then they got dropped.
Yeah, I think they're on Harvest now, but I'm not sure. But I like the unpredictability in some ways. I hate when it actually affects me, because I like seeing them play, and I hate when they cancel shows or break up out of the blue, but I like that they break the... tour, album, tour, album, tour of most bands. It feels like it's something different.
Sounds like you just read the lyrics to their next song.
I did.
Tour, album, tour.
Tour, album, tour, album, tour.
I have some footage. What else?
I saw a couple of movies. I saw Jurassic World. Let's talk a little bit about film score for a second. I know that you aren't too into John Williams.
I don't know who that is. Tennis player?
Yes, the tennis player. I've seen Jurassic Park more times than possibly any movie ever. The music of that movie is, like, part of the fabric of my being at this point.
It's pretty much instantly stuck in my head right now.
Yeah, exactly. And here's the thing. They include the two really iconic bits of his score. He's not the main composer for the film. Michael Giacchino is. But those two bits of score in that movie, and the minute that theme started up, like, I started, like... reflexively crying because it just triggered this amazing wave of nostalgia because I'm so connected to that music. There's so many bits of that are stuck in my head that I was just kind of overcome with this weird emotion seeing it or hearing it fresh and new in a different light. It's interesting when score does that. It's not very often that happens, and I really enjoy it. And the movie was good. It wasn't the best. It has problems. I wasn't expecting it to be Casablanca. I wasn't expecting it to be this amazing masterpiece of a movie, but it's fun and I enjoyed it a lot.
It has some epic parts. I saw it too.
Yeah, what did you think?
I thought it was fun. I thought the ending was epic. I'm not going to give it away. But aside from that, I'm glad I saw it. My only complaint is that it was really, really, really fucking loud. I don't know if it was the theater
I think it was the theater that you were in, because my theater, it wasn't too loud.
Well, you saw it at the St. John's pub, I'm assuming.
St. John's Twin.
Yeah, so that's probably not exactly top of the line sound equipment.
No.
I saw it at a Regal theater, and they just turned it like way the fuck up.
Yeah, those are the kinds of movies you can hear in the next theater.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
And you're like, why is Richard Nixon's falling down so loud? Because a dinosaur is stomping.
Pretty much.
I also saw Inside Out, which is the new Pixar film. Mm-hmm. It's a movie that is engineered to make parents weep and make them to crush their souls just a little bit more with every passing year. It's a really emotional movie. It's also the best Pixar has been in years. They're possibly my favorite studio ever. I've been seeing their movies since I was a kid, but they kind of fell off in quality over the last few years, but this one's a massive return to form. probably one of the funniest movies they've done in a very long time. Highly recommend it.
That's piqued my interest because the trailer that I saw...
Pixar trailers always suck.
Yeah, exactly.
Always, always, always. I've learned
to... It was attached to Cinderella whenever that came out. I saw it
with, it was like a year ago.
No,
I guess it hasn't been that long.
It was the Cinderella movie, which came out, I think, a few months ago. Anyway, but yeah, the trailer was, like, really...
They're bad.
Yeah.
Pixar doesn't make good trailers.
It was deceiving, because you make it sound like it's a story that's a lot of depth to it, but the trailer is just, like, fun, you know? Like,
yeah.
A totally different mood.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very, it's an interesting movie. It's got a lot of great ideas. It's got,
mm-hmm.
it's possibly their most experimental movie in a long time.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I also probably would not take my child through it, because
he would
probably not enjoy it all that much.
Well, I'll have to see that,
yeah,
because
absolutely.
Pixar, yeah, I mean, I always have faith in Pixar. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So what else, gentlemen?
I saw the new Netflix documentary on Nina Simone, What Happened, Miss Simone. It's great. It's really enjoyable. It's a little hard to watch at times to know that such a great artistic and creative genius fell on such hard times, but that's part of her story.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really, really well done, and it's really something. It's got a lot of her own narration over parts of it from various recorded interviews, and it's got a lot of great old footage of hers and what a life she led, and what a lasting influence she had on music, and just it's like interesting to think that I don't really think we will ever see the likes of somebody exactly like that again, and I don't think we'd ever seen it until she came along. Anyway, I mean, this was a woman who wanted to be a classical pianist, was you know, started playing piano from a very young age, and went on to be a well-known jazz artist, and then an extremely passionate civil rights activist who
mm-hmm.
performed at the Pettibone, I think, Bridge in
mm-hmm.
Selma. There's a line in the movie where someone recounts the story of her going up to Martin Luther King Jr. and saying, "I'm not nonviolent." And Martin Luther King saying, "Well, that's okay, sister," or whatever it is, and it's just like,
that's fantastic.
Nina Simone, man. I mean,
she was a talent.
Yeah, I was definitely very excited to see the documentary because, I mean, I never got a chance to see her. I know she played the Schnitz in like 2000 or 2001.
When did she pass?
She passed in, I want to say, 2002.
Okay.
Or 2003,
yeah.
She was 2003. She was 70, so it was great to see her performances because they are, quite legendary. In that Nick Cave documentary, even
mm-hmm.
one of the best parts in that movie is him talking about seeing Nina Simone, and we know what kind of a performer Nick Cave is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so when he's impressed,
he was impressed.
You know,
he was
yeah.
taken aback.
When
by
you're
her
when
ferocity.
You impress a king,
that.
That's
yeah.
something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I mean, so many great stories about Nina Simone that aren't even in the movie, like
yeah.
the Nick Cave story. It's a very personal film in a lot of ways because they have interviews with her daughter, they have interviews with her her late husband and manager they had a very volatile relationship, and in that sense, there's not a lot of, like, celebrity or musicians commenting on it,
mm-hmm.
and that's I just thought of
I
that
like
actually.
That.
That is what makes it that much more personal. And they've been working on it for about 10 years. The interviews with her ex-husband Andrew Stroud are from about 2006, and they were neighbors with Malcolm X and his family.
Mm.
Really,
and so some of the daughters of Malcolm X and Betty Shabazz are interviewed in the documentary, and those families were very close, which tells you a lot. And
I like the idea of doing a documentary like that that doesn't have shit tons of celebrity.
Andy Rollins, nowhere to be seen.
Yeah,
I
mean, I understand
it's
why
funny.
That happens a lot, because you've got people who are influenced by these musicians coming on to
right.
talk about these musicians, but it's nice to rein it in
mm-hmm.
and have it only be people who were truly directly
yeah,
affected
right,
by
yeah.
it, and it feels more personal
yeah.
that way.
I'm just remembering all the other people who were in it. and it was largely friends and stuff. I mean, I think Dick Gregory is in it as well, who was a friend of hers, as well as being like the, you know, the presence that he is on American culture. So
awesome. Anyway.
Yeah.
Cool.
You also rewatched Grace and Frankie, didn't you?
I watched Grace and Frankie again, the great Netflix.com web series featuring Lily Tomlin, Jane Fonda, tremendous.
Martin
Jane
Sheen,
Fonda, Martin
Sam Watterson.
Sam Watterson, and the whole cast is great, and it was even better the second time. I watched it with my mom and my sister, and it was interesting to watch it through their eyes and sort of be aware of, like, the context in which they were also seeing it. Back on June 14th, caught Sancho playing at a house show, and every band on the bill that night covered songs by the band Fleetwood Mac, who were a popular 70s American group, and the song that Sancho covered was Go Your Own Way, and they killed it. There was a massive mosh in the basement of the house that it was at. I have never seen, I don't think there has ever been a mosh to Fleetwood Mac. People were screaming along. You can go
That's
your own
awesome.
Way. You can call it a day. And it was one of the great moments and memories that I can remember in a very long time, to be part of that single cell organism kind of
That's
thing.
Cool.
And yet also still everyone there was seeing the same thing from like different perspectives and with like different context of like the people involved.
You know, the last
various things, some of which I will tell you guys off air.
The last time we met, we talked a lot about live music. That was our
right.
discussion for the day, and like something we talked about was moments like that.
Right.
And it's great that since then you've had one of those moments.
A few, I guess.
Yeah, I guess
yeah.
so. With that, it feels singular. It feels like that moment can never be
right.
replicated.
Yeah, for sure.
I love that.
I can't even. I mean, it was just that the climax of them playing "Go Your Own Way" at the end of that set was like cinematic. It was just like I can't believe. I feel like I'm watching this, but I'm right here.
That's fantastic.
It was great.
Anything else, gentlemen?
Huge highlight of the year.
Any records this week?
Which shocks me because I hate Fleetwood Mac.
Well, sometimes it takes another band doing that.
I think I like that song.
Sure, that's a good song.
I just like hate Fleetwood Mac.
Do you like Landslide when it's done by other artists?
No, fuck that band.
You mean fuck that song?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fuck Landslide.
I don't know. Maybe you like it when it's in the hands of Smashing Pumpkins or the Dixie Chicks.
Nope.
Okay.
Dreams is okay.
It's okay.
In the hands of other artists.
Okay. All right. That's something at least.
Simona's covered it earlier in the night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
All right. Excellent. Any records this week, gentlemen? Or this last, like, 8 weeks?
Any new records? I haven't heard anything new recently. I did have a pretty packed 2 weeks, though, but I'll just talk about quickly. I did, after we taped our last show, I went to see Laura Gibson at the Old Church.
How was she?
She was awesome. This is her big home, her first homecoming show, I think, since she moved to New York. And unfortunately, she, of course, lost her apartment in that big fire, so part of the... And she actually was able to raise
a lot of money on
GoFundMe, I think,
yeah.
And which was that was incredible in and of itself. It was a pretty powerful set. You could definitely hear the emotion in her voice because of just... It was the first time performing to her home crowd after those gestures of support from her fans. There were a lot of people there. I got pictures of the show, and they're up on Face on the Radio, on our Facebook, rather, right now. I had a lot of fun. I just wish I was able to catch more of the show. I only caught the second half, and luckily for me, there was an intermission. I came in during the intermission, which was, like, perfect timing, really. The other show that I caught in the interim was Kowloon Walled City at the No, and that was actually the first time that I've taken pictures taken pictures at the No in the lifetime of this show, which is strange because that's generally a pretty happening venue. I mean, there's a lot of shows that happen there every single week, generally in the kind of the punk metal realm. And Kowloon Walled City are a metal, they're like a sludge band. How I kind of describe them is if you like Neurosis, and Meshuggah and the band Isis. They kind of sound sort of like a combination of that. And I loved it. I've heard about them a lot over the course of the last like 5 or 6 years, just because they're a really like guitar heavy downtune band. And they had a record come out, I think, last year or 2 years ago called Container Ships. And I love their set. They actually played in the middle between two local bands. Their names escape me right now, but it was a great set. They played for about an hour, and I want to catch them again. Let's see. What else? I watched E3 this year. It was for the first time in like 15 years.
That's cool.
You can believe that.
What is that?
It's the Electronic Entertainment Expo. It's an industry.
And you watch it online?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lot of different companies doing showcases of things that they're working on, video games and software like and things like that.
It's a press, like, it's, so you can't actually go to E3.
Yeah, it's an industry.
It's a press-only event.
Yeah, it's an industry thing.
Yeah, and one of my friends, actually, who does work in the video game business, did get to go, and that was really cool, and she got a bunch of really cool free goodies. Anyway, it was a very significant thing for me, because I've mentioned in previous podcasts, I've been listening to a lot of video game music, been playing games and stuff like that. Of course, the big bombshell that really turned everybody on their heads was the Shenmue 3 announcement during Sony's press conference. That like opened up, that kind of opened up video games as a whole world to me all over again. It's like I saw these things that I hadn't seen in so long, and it brought back a lot of memories. Like you mentioned with Jurassic Park, you know, seeing that preview for that game and watching the previews for the other games just made me realize how much creativity and ingenuity goes into productions like that. And video games, like I mentioned in our, you know, correspondence off air, they're less like games and they're more like movies these days, which I think is amazing. Like this, their scores and just like screenwriters and so it was amazing for me to be following that for the first time in so long. And also they announced that Hannibal is not being renewed for a fourth season, and I was pretty bummed about that, but I'm pretty sure that they're gonna pick it up somewhere else, hopefully Netflix or hopefully Amazon. And
yeah, probably.
And before I forget, actually, because you guys are mentioning Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and I forgot to mention this, but I will now. My sister got to go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame over the last week because she was visiting some friends in Cleveland. And
how was that great tourist trap?
She loved it. Are you kidding? She took so many pictures and sent me a bunch. She sent me the handwritten lyrics to London Calling and like a bunch of Bowie outfits and God, what else? There was a broken guitar played by Mike McCready from Pearl Jam. she had a lot of fun, and she kept texting me saying that she wishes I was there. So it's
Pearl Jam in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
No, they're not, but I think they're eligible, aren't they?
I'm pretty sure.
I think
if Nirvana was, then definitely.
You know, actually, no. Pearl Jam put up their first record in 1990.
It's first release, not first record. I don't know if their first release.
Nirvana was for Love Buzz.
Yeah, exactly.
Their first release was in 1990 or 1991, so they're going to be eligible next year, I guess, because that already happened.
Bated breath.
But I wish I could go see it. It's a tourist trap, whatever, man. But it just seemed like a really fun, like, place to be.
I'm sure it's a fun tourist trap.
So it's been pretty packed. Eyelids on the show. We got to see their show this past week.
That's right.
Talk about that for a little bit.
Their first in a while, actually. Yeah. I had a lot of fun. They sounded great. It was their first time playing in a while. It was great to see them again. It's been a long time since I've seen them. It's kind of, they're a victim of circumstance for me. Every time I get a chance, I don't actually have that chance, but they sound great. And Phantom Ships opened for them, who I caught, which is
Matt Brown and
Steve Turner from Mudhoney.
Yeah, who were fantastic.
They
shredded.
Awesome.
It was great.
Heavy and just, it was great. Steve Turner was playing like a 12-string guitar distorted the whole time.
Yeah,
and it's like two, he's like playing, the way that he made it sound wasn't like a 12-string, it was like two guitars played at the same time, and it just added a whole new dimension to the music. I loved it. I got pictures of that show as well, and they're also on our Facebook.
Awesome.
Check them out.
Nice.
Anything else, gentlemen? We will be right back, right after this.
We'll be right back.
Right, everybody, we're back. That was an Eyelids track from their new 12-inch EP. Today, joining us on our show, please introduce yourselves, gentlemen.
I'm John Moen.
I'm Chris Salsarenko.
Tell us about yourselves, you giants.
we're 19 feet tall. And we're in a great mood today.
Yeah.
Because we just got shoes made for us. And it's really hard to get shoes.
Who made your shoes? Yeah. Tell us, what are you wearing today, gentlemen?
Actually, I'm not 19 feet. I'm 6 feet tall, and I'm wearing, you know, jeans and a shirt. It's like kind of a standard operation.
Yeah. Just look up online. We don't change much.
No,
we're collars and sweaters.
I think once you get a certain age, too, in this racket, you know, you're really kind of limited. You know, my physique will only take certain things. I can't wear beetle boots and little jackets and little, you know, like the little Greek sailor hat.
Yeah, exactly.
I look kind of dumb down there. My hair's falling out.
I'm starting to look dumb wearing t-shirts these days.
Oh, crap.
I put a t-shirt on today and I was like,
I can't wear this.
This is kind of dumb. Like, I think I have to put on a button shirt.
What kind of t-shirt was it that you
It was a Klaus Kinski t-shirt. I just didn't look right today. And I just was like, it's really hot, it's a black t-shirt, but it just was like,
yeah.
I don't know, I just, yeah.
Getting dressed is rough business.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, maybe we're a little more fashionable than I thought we were.
Are we?
I think so. I think we look
good.
Oh,
you just turned that around. I thought we were just...
No, we're not sloppy.
No.
I wouldn't say so.
No.
So tell us a little bit about what bands you've been in.
Chris, you tell first.
Well, almost everyone in the band has been here in the Portland area over 25 years. John and Jim, you're from the Salem area.
Right, two of us. Yes.
And I'm from here. And, you know, we met in the late 80s in our bands that used to play around Satyricon. I was in a cassette and sticker band called Death Midget for 5 years that had a track on a Doug Moody punk comp. That's about it.
High five.
Yeah. But we played occasionally with John and Jim's band, the Dharma Bums.
Yep.
Nice.
And they were kind of a big deal. And we became friends back then. And, you know, we liked a lot of the same bands. Miracle Workers were like one of our favorite bands from that era, and Poison Idea, and you know, the Rats.
Wipers.
Yeah, the Rats,
Zeta
Nation, and but we just kind of, you know, we've been in a ton of bands since then. That's just kind of how we started as teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
But
since then, you've done.
Yeah, I was in a band called Sprinkler that was on Sub Pop, and then like in 1990. So it was kind of weird after being a band for 5 years playing bass.
Great video.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Like 6 months later, it was like our band was on Sub Pop, a new band, and I'd never sang before really, or it was weird. It was intense, but it was I was in a band called Svelte for a while, and then me and John and Jim were in a band called Cave Manish Boys.
It was sort of the garage, 60s garage rock.
When it was so uncool to be psychedelic and garage that when Austin Powers came out, we were like, oh man, people are going to be like, groovy man, like to us. That's how long ago.
Did that happen?
No, but I mean, that's how long ago this, I mean, it was so uncool what we were doing. Yeah. Like there was no
we,
one was
we had
like,
my sister make us little vests out of fur. But fake,
oh,
like pink,
man.
Green, yellow, and light blue.
Easter colors.
Like, they're super uncool. But
if
we were wearing
when
that movie
that,
came out.
The
that.
Album came out. It was the label Moonster.
Blood Red,
Moonster in Spain put it out. It was with that guy from the Miracle Workers, Jerry, who was one of our heroes.
One of our heroes.
And we kind of were just making, we're just kind of like, let's just write these little psychedelic numbers. But before then, though, you had many projects you're into.
Right, I did. I played in a lot of bands. I was in the Fastbacks out of Seattle for a while. Took the train to practice. That didn't work out very well, being so far away. And then, let's see, I played with Steve Malkmus after a while of not playing drums. So the thing about me is, in this band I play guitar and sing, but I largely play drums in other bands. That's kind of more...
The Maroons, you sang and played guitar Maroon, with
Right, Jen. I had my own band called The Maroons for a while, post-Dharma Bums. Let's see, and then I played in... then I went joined the Decemberists. I played in...
You and Polly both played with Elliot for a spell?
Yeah, I did a very brief little bit with Elliot Smith. And then... oh, crud. Lots of stuff, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the thing. Every Gossamer Wings with...
Pete Krebs and Gossamer Wings, super fun.
You were
with,
in...
With Ben Shepherd from Soundgarden playing bass in that.
And you were in the Bolivian Seekers?
Bolivian Seekers with Sten, amazing guy.
It's just like, you just kind of, it's just what you did. It just was like, you always were like, time to do this cool little side weirdo thing and... Or, you know, or I'm taking this one serious. It was just, it's just, you always just were like, never not
Junior
in a band.
With
right.
Sean Krogan and
Yeah, and I was
Joanna
in Mustache with
Mustache.
Him. Everybody's and him, Sam Coombs, and then me and Polly were in Deep Fried Boogie Band with Sam Coombs. It's just like, you don't stop being in a band. And all these bands are so different. Like, Deep Fried Boogie Band was Sam's kind of baby, and it was really noisy, and our claim to fame last year was Zia from the Dandy Warhol's Our Music physically upset her because we use a lot of oscillators.
Really?
And we did a version of Frankenstein by Edgar Winter, and she went and threw up. the sound affected her so much. And
no kidding.
Yeah, and I'm like, I've always heard about that happening, but she told us, like, the next day, like, her friend was like, yeah, we had to leave because she, like, literally was getting sick.
Did That's she a like lot- it?
Yeah, because it was, like, it just was upsetting musically.
Sure.
Because it's, like, four different... We're playing straightforward boogie rock with, like, really weird oscillation happening at the same time. So you're kind of concentrating to it. You can't... It's as far away from Eyelids as you can get, you know? But it's like they all are complete extensions of me. Like, I love noisy music and what would be called punk music and experimental things. And I like pretty things. And I like... But, you know, it's just like... It's just... It's kind of cool to just constantly not be like, I am the psych guy, or I am the punk guy, or I, you know, it's like, my record collection's pretty varied.
Yeah.
And you know? I imagine for as long as you guys have been doing music, you've got enough people where if you kind of want to go in a different direction, you could call up five people and go, hey, I kind of want to jam to this specific thing. Can we put something together?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because we tried doing this before I joined Guided by Voices and before John was in the Decemberists, but just went to John's and demoed a few things. We'd always kind of wanted to do something together that was, you know, pretty and but kind of loud and, and you know, we had our touchstones, Rain Parade, Dream Syndicate, things like that, R.E.M., but it just, you know, we just didn't have, it, all of a sudden we got all caught up in this new excitement, you know, it was like, ooh, you know, like, you know, and we got really busy, and so it wasn't until about a little over two years ago that we were just like, let's just do it, you know, and then it ended up, that's the simple thing, so.
It's... How does it feel being in, like, an actual dedicated band at this moment in time instead of going on all of those different different paths with things? Does it feel a lot more focused at this moment in time? Or do you feel about as pulled in a million different directions?
Well, I think, you know, life is got a lot of different avenues for you, especially if you, you know, like, I have a family and a daughter, and so, you know, you kind of figure out how to put as much... together that you want to do as you can without letting everybody down.
Sure.
You know, and that's kind of how I think of it. It's not always that dramatic, but I mean, you know, so I'm in the Decemberists and Eyelids, and then I also play in Black Prairie with some of the Decemberists folks, and those are all super fun things to do. And then I've got a daughter too, you know, and
how
a wife.
How old is your daughter?
She's turned eight.
Okay.
So, you know, like, and that can't just be like something I do when I come home from everything else.
Sure.
You know, so there's a lot of thinking and planning and a lot of asking my bandmates for patience. And so from my end, I mean, that's how I, my part of it works.
Anyway. And I think the thing that's kind of happened was that, I don't think we knew, I think we knew what we hoped it would be, but I don't know if we thought it would kind of become what it became. It's really vague. What I'm saying is that it was an idea.
Right.
And
we've all had a lot of conceptual bands that didn't strike a chord with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Or even within the band, you know.
Or
like,
even within the band, after a while, you're kind of tired of the idea.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think this one sort of, at this point anyway, it's still, we're all still kind of like, kind of excited about it, you know, and and we play for people and they say that was actually good.
I think that's the thing is I tell people that the
we make good music.
My mom really likes it.
Well, the icing on the cake is that it just ended up. I'm really excited. I've always wanted to be in something. This is my first band that I've ever been in where I've written songs and somebody has done a harmony.
Hmm.
And it's like at this stage in the game, you think I would have had something as simple as that, but it's like super exotic to me still. I'm like,
Chris has got some punk damage.
Yeah. So it's like, I'm like, wow, you know, little things. And from the two of us working on all the Robert Pollard stuff together and making those records really quick. And
it should be mentioned that we do that with Jonathan, the third guitar player, too. So
yeah,
all three of us were involved in those.
But we worked really quickly and pretty telepathically and had to, like, John, I tried to make the albums for Robert Pollard, like, I wanted to kind of go back to some of the older records he did, which, like, he didn't even give the band enough time to learn the thing, and he'd be like, we're going to do it in two times, and then we're on.
What happens with prolific people?
So that's what I did with John. I'd be like, okay, it kind of goes like this, blah, 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 blah. Okay, and then we'll stop in that part, and then we'll kind of shift gears, and I'll teach you that part. And you would do it like in two takes, and then we'd move on. And by the time the record was done, by the time the day was over, you didn't even remember what you'd played on.
I have no idea.
And so, but we got all these really, we made hundreds of songs that way. Hundreds. In a 2.5 year period.
Chris did a really good job. I mean, he really produced those things. Like, he got the cassettes from Bob that were kind of, like, drunken gibberish, as far as I could tell. And he'd be like, oh, no, this is great. This is great. We're going to do this and this, and let's kind of imagine you're a dump truck, but you lost one wheel, and now go. And so I'd play along to the part, and, you know, he'd kind of give me a little character to get into.
Yeah.
But I had no idea what we were doing. I just was like, I'm helping Chris playing some drums, you know?
Yeah.
So he had so much to do with those. I admire how he was able to make great music out of that stuff. And I mean, it was great music. I wouldn't have been able to decipher it the way he did, I think.
Well, it was fun, too, because I knew that, Bob had inspired me at one point. I'd read something before I even knew him, that B-1000, he just made a bunch of collages and gave each of the collages a band name and then wrote a song for each of them. And I just was like,
that's interesting.
And I'm like, I want to do that for him again without him knowing.
Yeah.
So, like, because, you know, he writes so many different things. So I just tried to be, like, reset every time. Yeah. You know, like, all right, this is a self-contained thing, and now I'm going to reset it, and the song will be like, you know, Herman's Hermits fronted by, you know, the guy from Flipper, you know, or whatever, you know, and like just come up with these crazy fun combinations. And and so we learned really quickly that after all these years together, where we hadn't really done, you know, like original music together, that it came together really quickly. Mm. Like the first album, 854, we basically had all the parts done within a weekend with Jonathan. Jeez. The three of us got together.
Yeah.
And so all the little, pretty much all the riffs and the hooks and the little things, the little descending things, mm-hmm. like in Everybody, the song Everybody that has this, it's acoustic, but there's like these descending parts.
Mm-hmm.
You guys had kind of honed in on, it was just really, and we knew right then, we were like, this is kind of Charmed in a way that a lot of times, you know, you're like, all right, let's just keep plugging away and, you know, like, I enjoy you guys and we'll figure it out. But you don't really hear what I'm hearing and, you know, it just was really pure.
We both spent a lot of time writing separately and came with, you know, a bunch of stuff. But then we really did in one weekend sitting down with Jonathan and he kind of just...
Picked the best ones.
We kind of gave him a little bit of a bigger editor's hat because we knew we had written the stuff. So if he said, nah, Nick's on that one, even though I thought it was my raddest thing ever, I'd be like, okay, cool, you know. So it was cool. I think a lot of, it wasn't hard to, I think, you know, when you're doing something really good too, it's not hard to put your ego aside a little bit because you kind of have a sense that something good's happening, you know. So I think there was a lot of that kind of, those kind of good vibes happening.
And that's why, I mean, originally it was the three of us, but I mean, I think part of the reason you know, we were like, we want it to be a band. And so, you know, we were like, let them play, you know, they're great.
Right.
Instead of us like having to play every single part of it.
Right. And all that stuff that we were talking about was prior to Jim and Polly being in the band. So we were just the three of us and we were going to go record with me playing drums and Chris threw bass on it and. And we ended up kind of having those guys jump on for a few tracks by the time we got done making the record. So kind of a cobbled together a little bit. But.
Yeah, the music sounds very effortless a lot of the time. It feels very breezy, and it definitely... It feels like the flip side of having to put things together in a day and just kind of banging things out. It feels very natural in a lot of ways.
That's cool.
I think it was the... A lot of it is just having worked together for a long time, like Chris said, on the other project. There's already trust there, and there's already, like, I know Chris could produce anything into a really good song, and just like what he writes, you know? And so, you know, so I think it's just, it was easy.
And it was cool to do something that's like, you know, we're also... As much as we have similar tastes, we're very different, you know, like, and so it's kind of fun to have, like, you know, just have these different styles that kind of came and informed what the Sound of Islas became. Like, the way John plays is very different than the way I play, so we come up with things that really... compliment the songs and make them kind of better by accident. Like, I'm always just, every time I come in for something with Johnson, I'm like, oh, this is going to kind of dumb it down, or it's not going to be as, it's going to take away from the song, and maybe you feel the same way, and then it's just kind of like, it's like we, it all together creates this really lovely kind of, I don't mean to sound... weird, but like it's a little bit of a cool language between us.
Yeah, we're already 18 minutes in. You can't stop.
a little language thing kind of happens, and I think that
sounds like the pieces fit when that happens.
It's like being on a team, you know. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a rough analogy, sports and stuff, but I mean, you know, if everyone kind of has a little knows their part, kind of knows where they could, and it's not that you have to do the same thing on it, apply the same. Your same self to every song, but
or even
I think
band.
I mean, but having maturity enough to like hold out and listen and figure out where you might fit
right
into, you know. So Chris brings a song and he's got two guitar players, a bass and a drummer waiting for that song. It's, you know, we can't all just go jan 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 and, you know, do
right.
the Ramones eighth notes. You know, it's like it's gonna, it'll just sound like.
There's
a lot of music that works that way.
Yeah.
But for our songs, I think it's kind of nice to let it, you know, let them play it through and not play too much and sort of sit back and wait for one little noodle that I might come up with. And then, you know, these guys are good at saying, hey, what was that that you just did? And then
do it again.
Let's repeat that twice. And then, you know,
it's true.
It just arranges really quickly because we listen to each other.
On the other hand, too, we don't have three, like, loosey, ethereal things going on, too. I mean, you can go the other direction of it from being, like, really, you know, just boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
And to, like, this really, like, okay, we're going to just expand and we're just going to go off and, like, kind of, it's going to be all pedals and it's going to be all psychedelic and it's going to be, like, and you're going to have to find the song in it. I mean, the thing I think that we are really proud of is, like, we... we like writing songs. It's like a song-driven band
yeah. mm-hmm.
that has these really cool spaces in it and cool atmospheres. But I want to, you know, it's like, and that kind of then formed what the sound was, rather than it being like an atmosphere, and then you crack into it and you find the songs within it. Mm-hmm. It's like, mm-hmm. I don't know, I just think they're really, it's a really song-driven band.
I think of it more as pop songs
yeah.
for the most part with a psych backdrop, you know,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. as opposed to we're a psych band and then we just, you know,
we make poppy songs
on occasion. Back from, you know, E minor, A, E minor, A, E minor, A, come on, man, you know, jump on, you know, it's a little more like, I want to write a catchy pop song. And yeah. Not that all of them work out that way. I'm not saying mm-hmm. we succeed, but, that's the intention, my intention. When I'm writing my half of the songs.
Mm. Yeah, mine too. I agree. It's yeah. the same for me. And I think it's really fun also to be in a band where you're sharing. It's like really fun to play a song and then just be like, I'm going to play and listen now. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's such a different, usually in every band that I've been in where I wrote songs, it's like I sang every single moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just like, you can't. You just don't. Sometimes it's hard to know what's going on or up because you're just like you're just in the moment. Right. But it's really fun to be like, oh man, I'm really loving just playing guitar right now, mm-hmm. or like I'm, you know, or playing this one lead like in Ben Let You Down, like I think the thing is like I'll bring in things like the lead in that song. I was like I'm gonna try a little Thin Lizzy thing, and it's not a Thin Lizzy song at all. But I was like, I want this thing, like a dual guitar, mm-hmm. like kind of hard rock thing and this kind of, you know, chimey echo and the Bunnymen thing that we're doing. You know, it's like, it's just fun to like...
Well, yeah, you're saving me from being too modern English.
Right.
And
you're saving me from right. being too knuckle-draggy. And so, yeah, we're like, you know, we're yeah. like a Reese's commercial.
Yeah.
Definitely very guitar-heavy songs that I've seen based on like in yeah. the show, like you guys have three guitars on stage at
yeah.
any given moment.
That's crazy. Yeah, I know, it's a little much.
No, it works perfectly. I love the chemistry between you guys as players and just what orchestrates every single song. I was watching your fingers and seeing all the chord changes at like, full disclosure, I am a guitar player, so I was nerding out just a little bit.
Full disclosure, like, you've got pedals and guitars everywhere.
Okay, I know, but people can't see that.
Chris, going from being kind of the guy in the background playing other people's songs to going to actually uh-huh. being a songwriter, how has that changed how you write music and how you play music?
Well, in the early 90s when I was in these other bands, Sprinkler and Svelte, I was the songwriter in those bands, but it was like everyone had their parts they wrote in, mm-hmm. but those were really hard. I didn't enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard for me. I was like a bass player who was all of a sudden switching to guitar and singing, and I'm still a really naive guitar player. Like I'm not very well versed. Like the whole upper part of the guitar, 7 frets up,
mm-hmm.
is just like, I'm like, it's a total will. I'm like, someone could be like, find B. And I'm like, I know it's here, but I don't know anything up there. And so so that was always kind of challenging for me mm. when I was writing for those other bands. But, you know, I think just, you know, having more time and just kind of being a little bit more confident. Like, you know, I was very young in those other bands, and it was nerve-wracking a bit, and I think I'm not very prolific, but I'm enjoying it a lot more these days, the process. It's just like, I mean, there's still days where I'm just like, I'll just be like, ugh, this is gross, I'm putting the guitar down, what I just played is really bad.
I've ruined music for myself.
Yeah, yeah, and I have those, and I think it's kind of good to just be like, all right, you're getting to a really territory that's making your stomach hurt.
Admitting that's a good thing, though.
Yeah, because all the things that I brought in came together really quickly. I didn't really have to be like, ooh, okay, I'm going to come back to that one and work on it for 3 weeks. So it's good to know, like, I guess what I'm trying to say, mm-hmm. and it's taking a long time, is that I know a good song now in a way that I didn't in the past. I think I felt like I often was like just enamored with the excitement of that was enough. Like, oh, it's a riff and now I'm gonna just repeat it. Like, we looked back on our early bands like mm-hmm. Sprinkler and Dharma Bums, and a lot of the songs are pushing 5 minutes because we are just so we are new songwriters and you're just like, that riff is so fun to play. It's gotta be fun for everyone else to listen to, right?
Right.
And I think that, you know, one of the things also working with Bob is just being like, maybe it doesn't need a bridge. Maybe just these parts are enough yeah. of a language mm-hmm. to get the thing home. And really the other thing, if the bridge in it is really going to just, it's a week. It's not doing anything. Mm. And I always am disappointed when I hear a song and I'm like, this is really great. And all of a sudden some clunky thing comes in kind of shape, you know, be like, well, we're going here now because that's just
we know you're getting bored, so we're gonna do something different.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, that part kind of blows. So I don't know, I'm just enjoying it more, you know.
What do you sort of wish you could have told your younger self about what it's like to be you now?
Like a girl might kiss you someday. that you'll get into R-rated movies.
All good answers.
Renting a car is not cool.
No, I don't know. What do you think? Do you have any insight in that, John?
No, not really. I don't really. I don't want to. You have to look at your whole life as like one big long tapestry of art. You know, I think everything you've done has informed who you are at any given moment.
Yeah.
You know, everything up before it. So
including the mistakes.
And those weren't mistakes when they were made. They were just choices.
Right.
And, you know, it doesn't I don't choose to look at them as mistakes, I should say. You know, I mean I think we were, you know, when I was in the Dharma Bums and that band wrote, all four guys were all equal writers. And you know, some of us did more contribution than others. But we credit everybody all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really difficult thing to do, and it's really hard to be editorial in that process because you're saying, I don't want to do your part of the song that many times. And so, you know, you end up kind of building it by consensus, and it doesn't always equal, like, the best craft, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure are examples of people who've managed it, you know. Mm-hmm. I think Fugazi wrote all together.
Yeah, that's
right.
Yeah.
Bands. But I mean, but we also know that some of those songs, R.E.M. songs, were largely like Peter wrote the whole thing and then Michael went and put lyrics to it. And that's really not the whole band, you know.
Right.
But
right,
Dharma Bums, we really did. Like, we'd talk about it. We'd have, and it was a fun process then. And I wouldn't, that really set the stage for me, I think, for being able to collaborate at all, you know. And I've got a more maybe defined taste now about what I want a song to do, but I still am able to collaborate, which is a great thing. You know, that's awesome.
Great.
So I don't know, and we were energy guys. You know, that was Dharma Bums. We just wanted to have a party and jump up and down. You know, so get the song written and let's go jump up and down. You know, it's a different thing.
So what is a typical day of songwriting look like for Eyelids, and how does it compare to songwriting for other bands that you've been in?
Well, we write, Chris and I write, at this point in time, Chris and I both write about half and half. I mean, roughly, not, I'm not counting Chris, just so you know. So you have one more on the album, I won't be PO'd.
But I did write a song for you to sing.
That's true, that's Sharesies. I like that. I like that, that's fun.
It's about 6 songs in one Sharesie. Yeah.
So for me, I'm at home, you know, running through ideas, and I have, you know, a phone like an iPhone like you're using to record us, that I use the same, you know, format and I record what I call our snippets, which is me sitting around late at night on the guitar, humming along to things, and if I have put some chords or a riff and some vocal line together enough that I think is worth remembering, I'll make, you know, leave a snippet and put and give a name to it. That was the big lesson, was don't just let it be number 07, you know.
Yeah.
Think of something like the thing you almost said, like, you know, decomposition.
Like the first thing that pops into your brain.
Give it a title. Yeah, give it a title and don't edit too much. And then Then you can always go back and you can look at all those things. Yeah. And then some of them I choose to expand on. Some of them I'm like, what was I thinking, you know? crash can.
That's how that goes.
That's my
stuff. I think we both write a lot. But I don't write all the time, you know? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I've seen your list. I mean, you have hundreds of things, like ideas and things, and mm-hmm. I do too. And it's just like, and sometimes, you know, it's fun to go back, and sometimes you're just like, ugh, that's horrible. But yeah, it's pretty much the same process as John, okay. You know. And because it's, then what we do is we tend to, the two of us get together and kind of make sure that we're not, like, embarrassing each other with it. and then we, you know, bring it to Jonathan. And then, but, you know, that's kind of how we did the first record, but the EP, the two new songs on it, the two originals, were kind of put together in the basement at practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm assuming there'll be a little half and half of that. I mean, Jim is still like, oh, if you hear any bass things, you know, you can, you know, play it, do it what you want. There's something really nice about it, just kind of like everyone kind of having their the confidence to kind of put
yeah.
on what
mm-hmm. Well, they we end up feel. Putting a rhythm section together that we really super trust, you know?
Yeah.
And Jonathan's just he's such a tasty musician, and he just, the things he thinks of to do are always
yeah, they're cool.
So great. Sometimes you have to remind him what he did last time, because he's spaced out onto the next thing a little bit, but yeah, you're yeah. like, no, that thing last week was super cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you remind me of what that thing was?
It went, no. It's like, or whatever it was, you know.
Like backwards Western.
But I mean, you know, it's kind of like having, if you've got that sort of firepower in your arsenal, you have to use it, you know. I think, you know, that's song to song. There's some songs where, you know, like, you might know the mood. Halfway through writing it, you're like, this has to be, like, a certain way. Mm-hmm. And that's the songwriter's prerogative, for sure, you know? But mostly, I want to see what all these other guys would bring to my songs, for the most part.
Yeah, and I think the album ended up being fairly... It's loud and pretty, but then there's kind of acoustic element to each song, even though they're not acoustic songs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then there are some songs that are really... they kind of have a little bit of a burn at the beginning, like a slow burn in terms of the emotional, you know, and space of it.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of sparse. And then...
that's the other thing, is knowing when to not have drums, not have everybody play.
Yeah.
You know, making those decisions about songs.
I love doing that. Like, being what if there's no drums till like the last 30 seconds? Sounds great, and it does. You know, it's like, it's just, yeah.
You have to weigh this, put the song on the scale and just see what it, you know, I mean, they can't all take the same exact treatment, you know?
Sure.
Or else you're just, it's a little boring, you know?
Yeah, but we're also, you know... we're
some texture.
Yeah, without being like, you know, I think it's time for Pet Sounds, Vibe, Sleigh Bell, you know, like, that's the root, you know, that's what I really hear. It's like, there's still, you know, it's still guitar-driven music.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. So, John, one thing that I wanted to know is the last time that I saw you was at the Secret Society, but I think the last time I saw you before that might have been with the Decemberists in a big room. How different is it going from Eyelids, which is very restrained, very, at this point, kind of a smaller band, to going and playing with that unit, that big thing?
It's kind of apples, oranges to me, I think. Oranges is... what's that? That's a lot of oranges. I guess, you know, to me, for one thing, I'm playing a different instrument. And the John that plays drums is probably a little bit more, you know, not confident, certainly not overconfident as a drummer. I don't feel like I'm, like, the guy with the skills. But I've been doing it a long time, and I know my path through the forest on that instrument.
Mm-hmm.
At least, like, what I do. In terms of what people have allowed me to do in their bands with them as a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
So when I go to play with Eyelids and I'm getting to play guitar and I even get pedals and, you know, squiggly sounds. And I get to sing, which I love to do. I don't really feel like it's the same thing. Because and I'm a lot more nervous, and I'm wondering how am I presenting myself. There's a lot less second thought about drumming for me. That, and, you know, when I play guitar, I'm really, and the songs that I've written or helped, you know, with in a way that it makes it more personal too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit more like, maybe, you know, doing your spoken word poetry, at, in front of people for me. So it's just really more, it's a little more loaded. You know, a night that goes well is really great, and a night that goes poorly is like, oh my gosh, you know, just a different sort. I put a more weight on it just because it's more personal, I think.
That's completely fair.
So, but then you put all that stuff aside, and, you know, it's just really like, I think, you know, it's most musicians I know want to play for as many people as they can, you mm-hmm. know. I think that's, it's pretty disingenuous to say that you don't care. That people pay attention. I mean, there's certainly some people who act like maybe that for sure they didn't care. But I think most people, if you're bothering to, you know, rehearse once in a while and go get shows, you're, you know, the purpose of a show is to go, you know, play in front of people.
Right,
so,
get a reaction.
So, yeah, they are pretty different.
Different muscles entirely.
Different things in terms of, you know, how many people. But, I think I just want to play for as many people as possible, you know. I mean, my songs, we do. I mean, speak for yourself.
My room clears. When Chris starts into his room clears, the bathroom break songs, it's really great.
Oh, God.
The t-shirt line just starts filling up as soon as people are like, how many of John's songs are on this record? This one has more. I think I'll take whichever one has more of John's songs. That's the album I want. So
you gotta have a sense of humor about it.
Yeah. You guys definitely seem to have a sense of humor. It's an odd question, but how much of that is planned and how much of that is just like straight up organic?
It's
like,
organic. It's super organic. I mean, like
it's a great thing to do with your nervous energy for one. And stopping a song and, you know, you're playing. We had a funny night. We had a great show here in Portland for our EP release on Friday. And then Saturday we went up to Seattle. And I think the show in Seattle, we were all kind of a little tired. And the venue was a little, strange, or maybe not on our fans' maps. And
yeah.
It was a weird gig a little bit. And Chris, I reacted by sort of introverting. And Chris reacted by sort of sunstroke. I mean, talking strangely about his grandmother, and it was great, and I was so super thankful. And you know, it's definitely not planned. Like, we just have
this is who we are.
You take the moment. You try and be in the moment as much as you can, and it's always a little different. You know, that moment's always a little different.
Polly and Jim don't want to say a word. Jonathan, once in a while, will chime in, and me and you, you know, we just like to goof around. I mean, everyone's funny, but, like, not everyone wants to be on.
And
I think, I'm a ham, you know, and I really like, you know.
A lot of the bands we like, too, I have bands, Young Fresh Fellows were a big band for me when mm-hmm. I was growing up, and mm-hmm. watching them, they're always funny in between songs, and they're really, really funny. I mean, they're funnier than I am.
But
Replacements. Yeah. Like there was a part of the show that wasn't. It was like, yeah, you're getting the songs, but you're having. You want to be with those guys a little bit and experience. Yeah. Like, what are they like?
That's why.
Like, reveal something a little bit about themselves.
Yeah, Robert Pollard put out those two comedy records. It's all stage banter. You know, it's like there's. I think, you know, it's not for everybody. I saw the Vaseline's in January. They were so funny and raunchy, and there were people gasping in the audience as this band went into this super blue material, like, and then do these sweet songs, and then in between just
sort of
raunchy,
sexy comedy spiral.
Yeah, and it was like, and it was so great because this one was like, like in the audience you could hear people like gasping. And
do you remember
like,
what it was that elicited that reaction?
No, but it's they talked about it online. Like, people were actually after the show just being like, that was kind of amazing. Like, it was, you know, like, you know, but you know, my wife's from Scotland, and she says, you know, it's just there are people they take. You know, the piss out of each other more often. They're not so hung up on, mm-hmm. you know, on the taboos of it, you know, and And, like, you know, they were just tearing into each other, and a lot of it got really personal, but it was funny. And, like, you know, and just about how they couldn't have sex, and they couldn't find anyone to have sex, and, like, then, you know, they're getting desperate, and they're, like, kind of begging people to have sex with them at the show, and then, like, and they were talking about how they've never been attracted to each other. You know, it just was like that, and it was just funny. It was, like, it, and, you know.
I feel like that could cross the line between funny and painful to watch really easily.
It wasn't, though, because, like.
It's all about the delivery.
It's all about the delivery. Like, they're so funny and charming and likable. It's, like, you know, it wasn't, like, it wasn't. They love each other, so they can do that in a way that it's like, you know,
it doesn't feel like animosity.
Not at all. No, you can pick that stuff up really quickly. I mean, I've seen, you know, people like walk off a stage pissed. You can tell.
Sure.
When someone's, you're like, ooh, yeah. Ooh, this band is gonna break up. As I was, you know, it's like, you know, I mean, you know, so, and I think. Yeah, I think I don't know if we're funny, but we like to
attempt it.
You guys are funny.
Attempt it.
We like to make each other laugh.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oops, there's a microphone on. You know.
I think that's the way you've got to treat a lot of that is you've got to have fun with it and talk to the other people on stage like they're your friends rather than anything else.
Yeah.
And that stage banter thing, it's kind of a lost art in a lot of ways because people forget that performing is performing and there's another aspect that is untapped if you're not doing anything in between the songs.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, we're just known each other so long, it's just like, why not? Why wouldn't you? You know, it's like, it's just like, again, like the music, you know, the way we play, it's just extensions of our personality. Mm-hmm. And if we were really reserved and quiet and shy, that's fine. But, you know, it's just, it makes us more comfortable not to not be that way.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, I mean, look how long our answers are to your questions. You know, like, I'm sure you could ask these to a lot of people and it'd be really succinct and really just dead. And you'd be like, okay, well, you know, so then, what is that? But we're, like, answering eight things. Like, we're going around the thing, and it's, you know, that's just...
It's fun to be thinking and talking at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're a very tangent-heavy podcast a lot of the time, like so it. You guys are perfect for us.
Oh, great,
all
right.
Yeah.
So, what is, what's next for Eyelids?
This year, we did the Record Store Day single with the band from New Zealand,
Phoenix Foundation.
Yep, we were really excited that we silk screened them and we hand numbered them and everything, and it was really great. I mean, they pre sold and they're all gone before the date, and that's what's kind of happening with this EP. And so we're like, oh well, shoot, okay, what's happening beyond that? And I always kind of forget. Because, I mean, the EP just came out Tuesday. And so to be like, what's next?
But yeah, come on.
I know.
But there's a couple, it sounds silly, there's a couple of videos that are going to, they're going to be really amazing that we can't really share the system of them yet. But I think they're going to be really remarkable. And I think people are going to love them. And they're very different and very collaborative. So I'm really excited for those will be out next month. And one of them is going to be used because our album 854 is being reissued in the UK. Right. In September, Tim Burgess of the Charlatans UK is putting the album out there.
Nice.
So he heard it and loved it and said, we want to put it out. And, and so the goal is to go over to the UK and Europe in November. It's cool. Over there, there was a rockabilly band called the Eyelids, so we're called Eyelids O-R for Oregon. And so it's a completely different album cover. There's like some, you know, different tracks and stuff, and it was really flattering. And so like the BBC has been premiering songs on that, and so it's like, the album, which didn't come out that long ago, came out in October, has like a whole new life still. And then the we've been writing songs. We have probably between us 8 already, mm-hmm. I'd say.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and okay. So we'll probably go into the studio next year. We've been talking about, you know, what we want to do and how we
make
want to
a
do.
Tragic sophomore effort. What, something that's yeah. a nosedive city.
Well, is this EP a good sophomore plan. Effort? Or is it, is it technically...
Tank the band.
Like, do you consider, like... Yeah. Like, is an EP a sophomore? If it's your second release, is it a sophomore? Or does it
I don't
have to be
think
a second?
So.
I think so it's got to be the LP, second
right?
full
yeah,
length.
It has to
I
be guess the that's full true. Length.
Okay.
I mean, for people our age, anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're album-oriented.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's that's where we're moving, and then we'll be, you know, obviously playing out and doing... it's been really fun to play these songs live, because originally it was just going to be a studio thing, mm-hmm. like a thing we just needed to do. And then the live band just came out of being like, oh, this would be really cool to hear
that's
live and loud. And so it's still new to us. It's like, it's really... It's fun to look over and be like, oh, I can't, that's right, Jim's in the band. It's so cool we got Jim and Molly. And, you know, it's like, it's cool.
That awesome. Concept of you guys being a studio band just seems so weird, because having seen you guys, you're so effortless and natural mm-hmm. on stage that mm-hmm. I almost couldn't imagine not harnessing that.
I think what Chris was talking about is a little bit of a, you know, hypothetical. It was like, wouldn't it be cool if we had a pop psych band? Conceptual, you know.
Okay.
And so, as long as I've been a musician, with talking around the table with fellow musicians, the concept band has been prevalent. You know, it's like that's the thing you always sit around talking about. Wouldn't it be funny if we were in a it was like Red Cross, but we were like this and that. You know, you come up with ideas that you never do. And I think so. This was one that. Had risen to the surface once, and we'd made a couple of demos, and then we kind of it went away, and then by the time it came back a second time, it was something we really did want to do, as opposed to just
right.
you know.
And it was funny, like when we originally were talking about it, I mean, there was I don't think there was a single city in America that had something called Psych Fest,
mm-hmm.
and now it's like every city has Psych Fest. It's like it's a massive movement, and I know it's a bit of a catch-all,
mm-hmm.
but it's interesting. Like, it's really, it's quite a scene, mm-hmm. and so, yeah, it's interesting.
All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for joining
thank
us.
You.
Thank you.
Anything else you would like to plug before we release you? Where can you be found on the internet? Where can you be found in the world?
You can get, you can, our website is at .com.
How do you spell that?
I just
you
like
can't spell
so
that?
Many things to say. It's www.musicofeyelids.com. Musicofeyelids.com.
It's
we're
not
also
music,
on,
musicofeyelids.com.
It is musicofeyelids. No, it's musicofeyelids.com. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter, musicofeyelids. We're on Instagram. And, that's right. Burger. Is putting out the cassette of 854.
Yeah,
so that's been great, and you can find our stuff if you just do, you know, obviously a search. You'll see all the videos and stuff,
mm-hmm.
and, all
right.
and live footage and things.
And who put out the new EP?
Jealous Butcher did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. yeah. Who put out 854? So Rob Jones and Mike Jones. So Schizophonic was also involved.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All so. Right. Anything else, gentlemen?
Anything
else to plug?
Be safe. Be safe.
Be safe.
Be safe.
Be safe.
Words to live by. All right, everybody, we will be right back right after this.
I don't know where to begin. There's too many things that I can't remember. They disappeared like a trend, and the hum of the five in the early morning. And now I'm taking my time up through Coalinga, through the valley. This highway lived in my mind, it takes me back to the place that made
Everybody, we're back. That was Death Cab for Cutie, who will be playing this week at the Edgefield Amphitheater with a band called Built to Spill.
Nice.
Yeah.
Great lineup. Built to Spill, of course, playing at the Wonder Ballroom, I believe, later this month.
Indeed.
Or in July, rather.
Indeed. So as always, you can find us at facesontheradio.com. You can find us on facebook.com/livefromtheinternet. I can be found at TemporaryLife on Twitter and at GuitarsAndCats on Instagram. Yusuf?
You can find me on both Facebook and Twitter under my full name, Yusuf Hatlani. You can find my photography portfolio at yusuf-hatlani.squarespace.com. Aria, where you at?
I'm on Twitter at imigariaimig. I haven't been tweeting very much.
Yeah.
I'm also on Tumblr, ariafromtheblog.tumblr.com, but I haven't been tumbling very much.
You did have a Carmelo Anthony tweet.
Fuck Carmelo
Anthony. What's wrong with Carmelo Anthony?
He's a spoiled brat.
What was the tweet? Is he a sports player?
The tweet was, last I checked, Carmelo Anthony is a spoiled brat, is not news worthy of a headline.
Who's Carmelo Anthony?
He's a player for the Knicks.
Okay.
And we'd have to...
Which has no real effect on me whatsoever.
Yeah, we'd also have
just,
to...
It's just, like, annoying, irritating to see then.
Yeah, sure.
We'd have to get into... We would have to get into the NBA draft, which is a whole, like, thing unto itself.
Because
that did happen since...
It's true, it did. It was great. I watched it at Michael Mannheimer's house with Matt Singer and others, and et cetera.
For a second, I thought you were talking about, like, us personally getting into the NBA draft, and I was going to be like, yeah, that is a bit of a thing.
Michael Mannheimer did go to the NBA draft.
No, Holly means
that Yusuf was drafted.
I know.
Yeah, oh, we've actually been constricted into the NBA.
With the 579th pick in the NBA draft.
That'd be...
Out of the 578.
Reykjavik Raptors select Yusuf Hatlani. From Portland State University.
And the, yeah, and the stipend is like $250 a month.
A week.
They just give you a bunch of Faygo and then Polygon.
Yeah.
Look, man, we can't afford to pay you. So, like, here's a bunch of Jamba Juice coupons.
We can't pay you, but you get to hang out with Drake and Bjork.
Yeah,
I need that record.
I'm okay with
I need that.
That
record now.
It's a double album.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Give me a triple album of that.
Also coming up this week, Elvis Costello performing at the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall. I'll be there. It'll be my second time seeing Little Hands of Concrete this year, and my fifth time overall, this time with the full band, The Imposters, the great Steve Naive and Pete Thomas, his longtime collaborators on keyboards and drums, respectively, and bringing up the low-end Davey Farragher, formerly of Cracker, longtime member of The Imposters now, 13 years plus, I think, for him. And EC... Shellac in town twice this week. Revolution
at two
Hall
venues.
And Mississippi Studios. Which one are you seeing?
I'm not sure yet. I'm not sure if I'm going yet, but I'm hoping to go. The last time they were in town, I had the date wrong and could not see them, so Aria went in my stead.
I enjoyed it. Thursday night at Bunk Bar, Bay Area band Trails and Ways perform. I had booked their previous incarnation at Backspace maybe 3-4 years ago. By now, I think it was 4 years ago. Keith Brown, Portland native, I think, Lincoln High School graduate at the least, is one of the members of that band who are signed to a label out of Washington State called Barsook.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of them.
Previously the home of Menomina.
And Death Cab for Cutie.
Sure.
On Friday, our guest John Moen's other band, The Decembrists, will be playing... also at the Edgefield Amphitheater with Calexico. That should be pretty cool.
Nice.
And yeah, that'll be my... I think fifth time seeing them?
Wow.
Yeah.
I think it would be my... actually my fourth, believe it or not.
I believe it.
Yeah. Because I saw them open for Barack Obama, and then I saw them at Music Fest, then
I saw them...
at City Hall, so yeah.
Did you see them open for Obama?
Yeah, I
was there too. I mean, 55,000 people were there, but you
know. Yeah, I got the single worst sunburn of my life at that.
I got a pretty shitty sunburn.
I was in agony.
It was way better than when Bon Jovi opened for John Kerry in 2004.
Yeah. Yeah. Barack Obama got some really good openers, man.
Sure.
Bruce Springsteen.
Openers. Bruce Springsteen, Arcade Fire.
Bruce also did stuff for Carrie. Anyway.
National as well.
Sure.
Yeah.
Got to carry Buzz Butt up, but Buzz Blood Buzz Ohio.
That was actually
funny. R.E.M. everybody.
Actually funny. I'll be here all week.
Tip your waitresses.
Yep.
Yeah, seriously.
Tip your waitresses.
How much did you tip the waiter?
What waiter?
The waiter.
What waiter?
Why wait?
30%.
Snickers. Taste the rainbow.
What is this
guy, man?
This guy's got a heat stroke.
This
I'm
guy,
worried.
he's purposely saying, like, let's get the F out of here, man.
Yeah,
that's what he's saying.
Not necessarily.
If you happen to, for whatever reason, be listening outside of Portland, it's a hot one right now.
Like 7 inches
like
from,
from the midday sun.
I got the joke. Anyway. Sorry.
He understood the reference.
Hey.
Yes, indeed. It'll be a long, hot summer here on Faces on the Radio. It's July 6th, in fact, and so that means July is upon us, and there is an insane amount of things happening
yes,
in July. One Direction in Seattle, Lyle Lovett at Edgefield, and that's John Mellencamp at the Schnitz, Morrissey at Edgefield, Built to Spill's two-night stand at the Wonder Ballroom, Project Pabst featuring... just a couple little teeny weeny bands: Blondie,
Weezer.
Buzzcocks, Weezer,
TV on the
radio,
Passion Pit,
sure.
The OCs,
yeah.
Ghostface Killah, Del the Funky Homo
Ooh.
Sapien, The Sonics,
yeah, yes.
Earth,
Rocky Erickson,
just for God's sake,
Spitz.
I'll go out on a limb and say that's my favorite festival.
PDX Pop Now also happening in July,
yes,
with.
Everyone
in Portland.
The expected cadre of local bands, which is to say, that's what they do every year, is
yes,
they have local
yes.
bands play.
Yes, that is it's a new thing for them. I've heard that in the past it was only bands that were not from Portland, but they're focusing on PDX Pop Now being Portland now. The face Ari is making at me right now.
The internet's tone deaf, Ollie.
Huh?
Internet is tone deaf.
It's very true.
Yeah.
I think that's right about it in the coming week.
Yeah, somewhat. As always, you can find us online.
We've already plugged
that.
Okay, let's get out of here.
Let's get out of this heatstroke nightmare. So, as always, I'm Hollis Dixon.
Yusuf Fatlani.
Aria Amig.
Thank you again to Chris and John for joining us. We'll be taking notes. Have a great week.